Welcome back to That 590 Show. Joining us right now on the Belmont Automotive phone line is our friend Nick Hand, who covers the Blues for STLSportsPage.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Nick_Hand. Aloha, Mr. Hand.
Good evening, guys. How you be doing?
Doing wonderful, my friend. How are you? How's the lake?
Hell, it's very nice. A little rainy this morning, and was able to get a round of golf in before the NHL draft, so it's a nice little vacation.
Man, we should all be living as well as Nick Hand, man. Listen to that. At the Lake of the Ozarks, he probably slept in later than Matt Rocchio did, went out and played 18 holes, and now he's getting ready to talk to us and then go watch the NHL draft. But before we get to the draft, let's talk about David Perron. He got selected by the Las Vegas Golden Knights in their expansion draft. Any surprise there?
No, I think when the protection list came out and you saw who the Blues protected, you knew it was probably one of four players, kind of depending on which route that Vegas wanted to take. And if the Blues weren't going to be able to get a site deal done, it was looking like it was probably Perron. The forward options that Vegas had available for the expansion draft were pretty limited. Perron was definitely one of the better forwards that they were able to draft. You were hoping maybe they might take Laterra. They ended up being able to get a couple of centers via different means, and one of them signing the restricted free agent, which counted as the expansion draft in Minnesota with Eric Halla. David Perron is the pick that the Blues lose. That $3.75 million salary cap is off. And, when I was in the studio about a month ago and we were talking about everything, I didn't see Perron as somebody who fit the Blues' plans moving forward from what I gathered, and they didn't. We thought maybe he might go via trade, but instead he goes expansion draft.
I know that you brought up Jori Laterra, and that was kind of like the big wish of all the Blues fans, but how realistic of that was that going to really happen? Everybody saw how bad Jori Laterra played last year, and it seems like everybody's Blues fans were thinking that somehow those images were blocked by from the city of Las Vegas and they weren't going to see it. How realistic was it that Jori Laterra was going to be selected by the Golden Knights?
I think it would have got interesting if you would have seen if Perron wasn't there or if Perron didn't exist. I wouldn't be surprised. With as limited as the full forwards options were, I realize Laterra is not great, but he also only has 2 years left on the contract. $4.7 million looks horrible. Is that overpaid a little bit for a third-line center of what the production that he gave? Yeah, and what Vegas would have been banking on is the fact that they take a gamble on him. They hope he plays better this season, and you could turn him into another draft pick via the trade deadline if he catches hot and had 10 goals leading up to the trade deadline. That is what you were looking for. But it didn't happen. I still think with as much of a need as there is in center in the NHL, you look at some of these teams. Now, the Blues will probably have to absorb some of the salary. They can absorb and take on up to 50% of Laterra's cap hit. If the Blues need to move Laterra out, I still feel like there is an option out there if the Blues were able to retain salary.
Round one of the NHL draft is currently underway. The Blues have pick number 20 and pick number 27, respectively. Now, I'm hearing that the Blues may be interested in perhaps combining those two and trading up in the draft to go after a player that they like. Any idea who that player might be that they have their eyes on?
It's nearly impossible to figure out Bill Armstrong, and I say that in a very positive way. They keep it very close to the vest. There are a lot of centers out there, though. Probably more than likely by the time the Blues draft, unless they're able to trade up here relatively shortly, you're going to see the centers like Mittelstadt and Valari and Rasmussen all go off the board. It's possible the Blues could get up and maybe that 10 to 15 range, and then you'd be looking at a player like Cody Glass out of Portland or a Nick Suzuki out of Orange Sound. If the Blues cannot, and let me throw Ryan Poland out there as well with St. Cloud State, freshman who's now eligible, and freshman who's now eligible, and he's from St. Cloud State. If the Blues cannot make a trade, then if we're looking still at the center range, which given the Blues need, we're probably looking at them drafting another center. you would hope maybe a Shane Bowers or one of those types are able to fall to the Blues that they'll pick. You know, it's really hard. I mean, we'll find out soon enough who they have targeted, but, you know, you can look at the TSN scouting rankings with Craig Button, and you can look at the league central scouting. Every NHL team is different, and you really won't know who is on the Blues wish list and who's top of their center class until it happens. And that's one of the fun things about the NHL draft is, you know, most of these guys are relatively unknowns, and I've seen a couple of these kids play a couple of the games, but you're talking about scouts who travel up in Western Canada and Ontario and up in Minnesota in that area and do that nonstop for 6 months. There's nobody that's a possible first-round pick that the Blues haven't seen at least 10 to 20 times between their scouts. So, you know, they evaluated, and the Blues have earned some equity in this standpoint. When you look at Robbie Fabry, and if you look what Bill Armstrong did in getting Colton Parayko and that gem of a pick and not knowing about that pick and relatively an unknown when he was drafted, the Blues have been known to surprise us a couple of times, and they've done pretty good in their drafting in recent seasons.
And the last time they had two first-round picks was 2010, and with those two picks, they selected Vladimir Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz. So at least when they had two first-round picks in 2010, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, they did, and that was a very bold trade at that point in time, because if you remember, they selected Schwartz, and then Tarasenko was kind of the wild card, because at the time there was they weren't sure about the NHL and Russia transfer agreement. There was rumors, you know, is he ever even going to come over? And then the Blues gave up their first-round draft pick in David Lindblad to Ottawa, and the rest is history with Tarasenko being drafted and then coming over a couple seasons later. So you have to hope, and don't rule out the possibility as well. A team starts getting, you know, high on one of these players, and the Blues are able to develop a package with one or two of the first-round draft picks and able to get a player that's an impact player to start out this season. So we'll have to see how it goes. It's going to be an exciting next hour to try to figure out, you know, where the Blues shake out. And you know, they still have free agency coming in about a week.
The two first picks are already off the board. Nico Hischier goes to the New Jersey Devils, and then Nolan Patrick goes to the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't think either one of those two are a surprise to go 1 and 2.
Nope, and you know, Central Scouting had Patrick 1 and then Hischier 2. It's great for St. Louis and St. Louis connection with Nico Hischier, who went first overall. His agent is Alain Waugh, who was a former goalie. Here's an obscure trivia for the night. He was a former goalie and front office member of the old St. Louis Vipers of the indoor hockey or the roller hockey. And
I remember them, yeah.
And he is the agent. Alain Waugh is the agent for Nico.
Oh, wow.
So that's the first time that Alain Waugh has had a first overall draft pick in the NHL. And he has a very budding agency that is really doing great things and has a lot of great clients, including Ben Bishop and Jake Allen. So that was excellent to see from a little bit of a St. Louis connection.
I have a text coming in from Hockey Bob. I think you'll enjoy this, Nick. It's saying Perron could not stand out on a team full of rookies in Edmonton with Gatzlaff in Anaheim or Crosby in Pittsburgh. The dude is a best at serviceable third line player. Do you agree with that assessment?
You know what? That's one of the most rational ones that Hockey Bob has had.
I think you just made his weekend.
David Perron is a very suitable and serviceable secondary scorer. Now, the hard thing about that, he had a good regular season for the Blues, but he was invisible in the postseason. And he played 11 postseason games and only provided the Blues one assist. And, you know, that is unacceptable. And, you know, the Blues are at a point where, yeah, regular season production is great and they're going to need it, but you're paid to produce in the postseason when you're talking about the St. Louis Blues. And David Perron didn't do it, and that's why they let him go. And, yeah, and I know everybody's going to say, well, yeah, but Perron was fourth in the team with 18 goals last season, and, you know, he played well. He did, yes, but you also didn't have Vladimir Sobotka for the entire season. You lost Robbie Fabry. And, you know, Dmitri Yaskin did not look bad, along with Magnus Pajarvi. Neither of those guys looked that bad on the wing. And Yaskin outplayed Perron in his limited postseason appearances. So, you know, maybe this opens up the door to give Dmitri Yaskin more time on the wing and see if he can continue that development, because he's still a young player. You know, it's, I understand Blues fans' frustration, but I don't think that frustration would exist if they can improve at Sinnel. And that's probably leading into your next question.
That is my next question. What centers are out there for the Blues to take?
Well, you know, you have the draft, but if the Blues don't trade up, it's very unlikely. Really, Patrick and Nico Hershaw are the only two Sinnelmen that you could see maybe having, and most likely having, some type of impact in the NHL this year. I said it a month ago when I was in the studio with you guys, and with what you see with the Blues and their lack of transactions during this kind of hectic trade period in the NHL, with the exception of losing Braun, I still think you are looking at a team that is looking at Joe Thornton in free agency as their number one target.
If that does happen, I'm going to be like, I got to credit Nick Hand. He's the first one to say it. He's the only one I've heard say it, that Joe Thornton is going to be wearing the note in the 2017-2018 season.
There's not a lot out there from a trade standpoint. And you look today at Derek Stefan, and I know that one might have rumbled some Blues fans, but you really look at it, and Derek Stefan is not an upgrade over Paul Stastny, and he's not that much different than a Patrick Berglund and what Patrick Berglund did last season. And yeah, you know, you get enamored sometimes by thinking about the fresh face and the fresh settle, but, you know, just because he's available to acquire, there's not too many true top six centermen that's available via trade right now, and Joe Thornton fits that mold. He's rumored to say roughly he wants a three-year contract around $5 million. I'm not necessarily sold on 3 years, but if you can get him at a one- or two-year deal and the free agent market isn't what he's looking at, that is still the most realistic option, I believe, for the St. Louis Blues to improve it down the middle.
I'm not sure right now who's the more busier GM in Chicago, if it's Stan Bowman for the Blackhawks or if it's Gare Forman for the Chicago Bulls. But Stan Bowman, who I didn't realize, man, he looks so much like his father. I've never seen a picture of him until today. And oh my God, does he look like his father, Scotty. But the Chicago Blackhawks making – what's that?
Man, do they look alike, a lot alike.
They look
– when you see what Bowman looked like when he coached the Blues.
I would imagine he looked exactly like the way Stan Bowman does now. I can't imagine it being much different. But the Chicago Blackhawks making several transactions the past couple days.
Yeah, and you know, they knew that they had to have a change, and they got rid of Yarmerson and shipped him out. And then trading Panarin and getting back Brandon Saad, and that's, you know, Panarin was a big impact player offensively, but Brandon Saad was one of their main linchpins when they had that huge playoff run and won the Stanley Cup in 2015. And bringing back Saad is a big piece for the Blackhawks. The issue still remains. You have an overpaid Brent Seabrook that you don't think you're going to be able to move, and you still lack the depth up front. And you know, Saad for Panarin, it looks mostly like that's a wash. And it's a different type of player, but unless they're able to figure out the cap room again, and the big wild card in this is the Marian Hossa news, with Marian Hossa having that allergic skin reaction to his equipment. Apparently it's been ongoing for the last 6 or 7 months, and it was something that he struggled with in the postseason as well. What's going to be interesting is what the league's going to rule on that because of his salary cap implications, which would take a while to explain. Long story short is if you put him on long-term IR, his salary cap hit does not count against the Blackhawks. If he has to retire due to this, the Blackhawks will face a cap recapture penalty because he was one of those old contracts under the before the last lockout that was prorated and was front-loaded to really be a beneficiary for the Blackhawks in the later seasons. And so that's going to be a ruling that's necessary from the NHL. But yeah, you're seeing some great movement from the Blackhawks. Whether or not they're really addressing the depth that they need to contend again is something that we still need to see and see what happens with their salary cap situation.
I think what the Blackhawks have done since the end of the season and what they've done the past couple days, I always think this is what the Blues want. Blues fans, this is what they want the Blues to do. Like, they're firing coaches and they're trading players, you know, just a bunch of activity. You don't know if it's going to be effective or not, but they just want to see a bunch of activity.
Blues fans do, and you know, I think part of that is because most Blues fans were brought up with being around, you know, if you grew up in the 90s, you had Ron Klon. who, whether or not the Blues improved or not, you knew it was going to be an entertaining offseason, and that's the type of movement that they saw, and I think Blues fans still expect that. But sometimes you can make movements and transactions, and it doesn't really mean that you're improving. You know, yes, Chicago's had the incredible one of the 3 years in the six cups, or the three cups in the 6 years, but the issue for them is they faced what the Blues have faced of back-to-back first-round postseason exits, and now they're seeing that. And the Blues are on a little bit of a different trajectory. Yeah, they took a little bit of a step back last season, but you're talking about a team that went to the conference finals and now went back to the second round in what was considered a transition year. And the Blues are one piece away, and that piece is a big piece, and it's one of the hardest pieces in hockey to acquire is help down the middle of getting one of those top six centers. But if they can get that scoring line center, you're going to see this team go to another level that they haven't seen. And it's frustrating for Blues fans. It's not for a lack of effort on Doug Armstrong's part. He's trying to do what he can. There's really only about 40 of those players out of the NHL, and every single team wants them. And when you have one, you don't usually get rid of them unless it's a player that's entering free agency, which is the case of Joe Thornton and is over 35, or is a player who's looking at the next contract and you're a team like Colorado who's looking at possibly trading a Matt Duchene, but Matt Duchene's making $7 million a season. So there's no easy fix when you're looking at center. It's like trying to get a number one defenseman in the NHL.
Hockey Bob texting back in saying, Berger, your knowledge of the NHL is almost as incredible as Pebbles Rocchio's lack of knowledge of Danielson. Now, the fact that I have Hockey Bob as an ally in this whole Karate Kid argument is making me re-question my entire stance.
I've been on vacation, and I only saw a little bit of this. Is he trying to say that the Karate Kid was a bully?
Yeah. Nick, I don't have time to get to it now. We got to get to Shane Young. No, Rocchio, don't you say a word. We got to get to commercial break. No. Rocchio? We got to get to commercial break. We got to get to Shane Young. Nick, the next time we have you in studio, we'll talk about it.
Have a good night, guys.
You too, Nick. That is Nick Hand from STLSportsPage.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Nick Hand. What?
Go to Twitter. John Giamatti Rudolph tweeted it out, Mr. Hand.
I'll tell you.
Follow the link. John Giamatti's going to hit you up on Twitter. Follow the link and you'll see the light.
You can't just watch one part. You have to watch the whole movie.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Giamatti. There's like five, six different scenes in that video.
Four or five scenes.
Okay, how long is that? How long is that YouTube clip?
I believe
it's a few minutes.
As opposed to a 90-minute movie, you're going to summarize it in just a few minutes. Let's get to commercial break, and then on the other side, we're going to be joined by Shane Young from bballbreakdown.com. If I don't have a heart attack, breakdown.com. Before then, you're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.